I looked straight into the face of a clan leader and actually talked to him cordially. Not because I wanted to, not at all. I had been a reporter for the St. Petersburg Times in Florida for less than a year when the Ku Klux Klan announced a rally in downtown St. Petersburg. It occurred on a Saturday, which proved most unfortunate for me. I worked the weekend cops beat, covering crime from the newspaper's main office. On Saturdays, the paper scheduled one daytime cops reporter and one editor per county. The editor in Pinellas County that morning assigned the story without much expression, saying something like, "The KKK is having a rally downtown." As matter of fact, as usual, he offered some information about the time and location, then turned back to his computer screen. With no other reporter on duty, the story automatically fell to me. I stood there, staring at his profile. Did he not see that I am black? Did he not know that the Klan was a terrorist group known for beating and lynching black people? But of course he knew. He, too, was African American. Two and a handful of black journalists working in the paper's newsroom at the time, Sebastian Dorch and I forged a bond during our Saturday shift together. In time, I would spend Thanksgiving with his family, coveting his wife's recipe for sweet potato casserole. We would occasionally do lunch, often talking about faith and family, as much as we did stories and newsroom politics. "KKK rally?" I said, my tone incredulous. "Reed, man, please, are you serious?" He was. We had to cover the rally in case major protests or news erupted, a possibility since the city had been engulfed in riots some time before, and racial tensions remained high. The riots started one day in October 1996, after two white police officers stopped Tyron Lewis, an 18-year-old black man, for speeding. The car he drove had been reported stolen, although it was unclear if officers knew that at the time of the stop. It would be revealed later that an addict sold Lewis the car in exchange for crack cocaine, then reported it stolen. Officer Jim Knight commanded Lewis to exit the vehicle, but he did not. Instead, Lewis eased the car forward so that the bumper nudged Knight, who stood in front of the car. A series of commands and responses followed, ending when Knight shot Lewis through the windshield three times. Lewis died at the scene. Riots ensued over the next few days and again weeks later when a grand jury failed to indict Knight. Reporters stationed in the newspaper's main office covered ongoing developments in the story. Tuesday through Friday, I worked with a small crew from a satellite office in Clearwater at the time, writing about small-town government issues, human interest stories, and crime on the county's north side. But on Saturdays, when I reported to the main office in St. Petersburg, crumbs from the Lewis killing occasionally fell into my lap. I found bits of news through the National People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, a longtime black activist group with members who wore dashikis and went by Native African-sounding names. The word Uhuru is Swahili for freedom, and the group led protests against the local police department and called for racial justice. I worked up my courage when approaching group members, realizing that we shared skin tone and the black experience in America, but differed in our ideological approaches to success. They seemed contentedly marginalized from the mainstream, decrying injustice from the outside. I, on the other hand, had spent a lifetime making a place for myself within that mainstream, striving to diversify it and create equality from the inside. In the end, we all wanted fair treatment for our human value to be recognized. Still, the mix of viewpoints could get messy, with one side deeming the other to be either a sellout or too radical.